He's amused Cam Newton.
Just ask that question one more time.
He's been insulted by Charles Barkley.
When some idiot in the press asked him, if you know what you know now, would you have scheduled this game?
He's interviewed Matthew McConaughey.
I do say go Tar-Heel.
And he's taken on Big Blue Nation.
He's just completely taken the wind out of my sails.
It's time for The Drive with Josh Graham.
You are on a Monday Drive, WSJS, News Talk Sports for The Triad, where since the NFL draft is officially in the books, it feels like everybody has grades for their favorite teams today, which doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. We're not going to know how any of these drafts panned out until years from now. It's part of the reason why we've developed the tradition, the Monday after the draft, attaching grades to drafts the past 3 or 4 years, and we'll do that a little bit later on in today's show. But the process usually goes Monday, you have the draft arrive, and everybody has the grades. They're years too early, but then when it is time to grade those classes, everybody has another draft to grade immediately after the fact. See how that works? The Carolina Panthers draft will be defined exclusively by Bryce Young. That's it. Even if Jonathan Mingo and DJ Johnson go on to become Pro Bowlers on an annual basis, this class will not be viewed as a success if the quarterback doesn't hit, full stop. But now that Bryce is here, and he's going to begin rookie minicamp this week, it's clear Carolina was the perfect destination for him to end up. We now know where the other destinations could have been. Look at the next three quarterbacks, where they stopped at, where they ended up at. CJ Stroud, he goes to Houston. Is there a more dysfunctional organization than the Houston Texans? How many consecutive years have they fired their head coach? And the guy they just hired is a first-time head coach who happens to have a defensive background. That's what CJ Stroud is stepping into. How about Anthony Richardson? He's going to Indianapolis, another rookie head coach, and the Colts last year, second worst in the league in sacks allowed. Will Levis, taken in round two. Tennessee takes him. Pro Football Focus says they have the worst offensive line in the sport. Mike Vrabel, he's a defensive-minded coach. It's a mess at quarterback. They got Malik Willis and Ryan Tannehill. Nobody really knows what's going on there. That doesn't seem like a great spot to step into. Meanwhile, Bryce Young, he's going to have all five starters back on the offensive line, plus a pretty experienced collection of offensive coaches. Frank Reich played the position. This isn't his first rodeo as a head coach in the league. He's a winning coach. We know what he is. You've got Thomas Brown from the Sean McVay tree. You've got Josh McCown, who started in this league as your quarterback's coach. Jim Caldwell in there helping as well. You got Parks Frazier as your passing game coordinator. They've poured so many resources into getting this pick and finding coaches to surround this pick and make sure that the pick is successful. Here was Frank Reich talking about that support system.
In the quarterback room, there's a lot of power that goes into that room, a lot of work that goes into that room. You know, really the main voices in that room are Thomas Brown, our offensive coordinator, will be Josh, and myself. There are other people in the room. Parks Frazier, you know, will be in the room as our pass game coordinator. You know, Jim Caldwell will be involved. And really what we do is kind of divide and conquer. Everybody gets kind of assignments on the work that needs to be done to help prepare the quarterback and really help prepare our offense.
That was Frank Reich over the weekend. There isn't a better organization for Bryce Young to end up at because there isn't an organization that cares less about his frame than Carolina does. Scott Fitterer, who's going to be a guest on this show in about 25 minutes. Make sure you're around listening or watching at the bottom of the hour and catching the Panthers GM joining the show. He was part of the Seattle Brain Trust that drafted Russell Wilson, as you may or may not know. When you think about the Carolina Panthers, you think about the stars that they've brought in over the last 28 years. The two most beloved players in Carolina Panthers history are both 5'9", Sam Mills and Steve Smith. Both told they were too small to get it done. And then they did. That's what the Panthers have had happen in their short history. Sam Mills going to an NFC Championship game. Steve Smith taking this team to its first ever Super Bowl. The two most beloved players. Bryce Young's taller than both of them. So is he too small? Venture to say probably not. It's also an advantage that he ended up in the NFC. You look at the other three quarterbacks, where'd they end up? Houston, Tennessee. Ended up in Indianapolis, all in the AFC side. That's where the murderer's row's at. Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, now Aaron Rodgers goes from the NFC to the AFC. Josh Allen, all the great quarterbacks it seems like are in the AFC. And where does Bryce Young end up? Not just the NFC, but the NFC South. Give it a year, he might be the best quarterback in the division. He might be the best quarterback right now. We'll see. Let me ask the question. Now that Aaron Rodgers is out of the NFC, who is the best quarterback in the NFC? Jalen Hurts? Is it Matthew Stafford? And then if those are the top two, who's next? Kyler Murray? Are we going to go Jared Goff?
You'd probably have to say it's Jalen Hurts, I would imagine.
Dak Prescott? If that's the list, that's a great place to be. The Panthers were the perfect destination. So often these number one picks end up in terrible situations. Bryce Young has stepped into the perfect situation. That voice you just heard belongs to Will Dalton, the executive producer of this show. Taking your calls at 336-777-1600. Again, on Twitter at WSJS Radio. That's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and on Twitch. Give us a subscribe. Bang on that subscribe button on YouTube. We would appreciate that. WD, thanks for keeping this seat warm on Friday. I could see you didn't burn the place down.
I didn't. Everything's still standing. The power didn't go out. The lights are okay. We're good.
Glad to hear. Congratulations to the Carolina Thunderbirds over the weekend, too, getting to the Commissioner's Cup final. And while hockey is on the mind, everything is breaking the Carolina Hurricanes' way right now. Don't look now, but all the things that could happen positively for them in this. All the things that could have happened positively for them has to this point. WD, do you remember the things we said had to break their way in order for Carolina to make a run to the Stanley Cup? Do you remember?
Did it have anything to do with Boston losing?
We needed Boston, some puck luck, for them to lose in either round one or round two.
Boston,
and they lost in
Boston,
round one.
Boston.
Round one. Big weekend for the Panthers. If you're a Panther fan, you get Bryce Young. And then if you're a hockey Panther fan, you knock off the Boston Bruins. They went down in round one.
Boston.
Good news, Bruin fans, though. At least it wasn't a failure, according to Giannis. Not a failure. There you go. Perhaps the greatest collapse in NHL history, though. Losing to an 8 seed, having the greatest regular season ever. You're up 3-1 and you blow that. That is great for Carolina, which means now they have home ice throughout the rest of the playoffs. Best record in the league. So as long as Carolina keeps playing, they're going to have home ice against whoever they play. And in round two, which leads to the next thing I said needed to happen before the playoffs, you need a good old long series between the Rangers and the Devils. And that's what we got. 7-game series. Game 7 is tonight in New Jersey. The next thing they could need is New Jersey to win on home ice. Carolina matches up better with the Devils. The winner of this game, you want to talk about a quick turnaround after an emotional long series? The winner of tonight's game will fly into Raleigh either late tonight or early tomorrow morning. We learned today, game 1 for Canes, Devils, or Rangers is going to be Wednesday night. That's when game 1 is going to be. Huge, quick turnaround. And Carolina, meanwhile, is just enjoying a 5-day layoff after Paul Stastny netted that OT winner to beat the Islanders in 6. Somebody tell Las Vegas, though. Vegas has not noticed. Pointed this out today on my social media. I'm at Josh Graham Radio on Twitter. Carolina, going into the playoffs, had the 6 best odds to win the Stanley Cup. So you might think they would fly up the odds, fly up the line a little bit with Boston losing, with the Avalanche losing. They had the 2nd best record in the West. With the Lightning losing. You'd be wrong, though. They have the 5th best odds now.
Send me that cash out, family.
Best record of remaining teams in the league. Home ice the rest of the way. The Stanley Cup playoffs go through Raleigh. 5th best
odds to win the Stanley Cup. Okay, then. You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
Feeling very triad-centric right now. Went to Merlefest over the weekend, camped out there. Probably wasn't the best idea given the rain in the forecast, but we got through it. And now we welcome in the pride of Winston-Salem, Brian Geisinger, joining the show to make us a lot smarter on hoop matters. We'll get to out-precise the Geis in just a bit. Let's start with the ACC very quickly, though, and more specifically, what Hubert Davis has done in the transfer portal. A lot of guys that he's seen play his team up close the last couple of years. Paxson Wojcik was a guard for Brown who played in Chapel Hill. A couple of ACC guys, Jalen Withers from Louisville, Cormac Ryan from Notre Dame. And then the most recent add was Harrison Ingram, a former five-star who played for former Carolina assistant Jared Haas, or former Roy Williams assistant Jared Haas, out at Stanford. He's out on the wing for the Tar Heels. What have you made of the decisions Hubert's made through the portal thus far?
I think they've been really good. I mean, Harrison Ingram is you know, an NBA-type talent player. He's unique for a wing because he is sort of like a pass-first guard with big size on the wing who can't really turn the corner, he wants to post up a lot, but is really unselfish, has really good vision, and can be a bit of a matchup bully. I think there are a lot of creative ways that Hubert Davis can use him in some of their pick and roll sets, some of their five out looks. There's a lot of good ways to get a guy like Ingram rolling. And it just, I think it gets to the point where I think after the last couple of years where they were so dependent on Caleb Love and RJ Davis handling two, you know, Davis, both very good players, but Davis, a smaller guard and Caleb Love inconsistent, you know, maybe at best and someone who, even when he had his 3-point shot rocking and rolling, like was always a spotty to bad, you know, interior finisher. So you have a bigger player like Ingram that can create, can post up, that maybe gives you some more stuff you can do throughout the game and perhaps even in sort of like crunch time situations. And Cormac Ryan, like we've seen his work at Notre Dame for a couple of years now, like good secondary creator, can give you some ball handling reps, good perimeter defender, can navigate screens, can take away some of those tough perimeter matchups, and he can shoot and shoot off movement. Like just like a really, really nice like veteran secondary piece. And I guess another former Stanford player at that as well.
Yeah.
Or a stop at in South Bend.
To emphasize the secondary point, though, it does seem like with him and Withers, they're finding players, they're emphasizing, put a premium on three-point shooting. All these guys have been 40% three-point shooters at one point in their career or close to it. Paxson Wojcik last year was 38% from three. And putting a premium on passing the ball as well, given how bad Carolina was at moving the basketball. It seems that was important to Hubert. And also, these seem like guys that'll get the most out of RJ Davis and Armando Bacot in the post. How intentional do you think those pieces are, or what they're doing to try and elevate those guys?
I mean, that had like Davis and Bacot. I mean, that's going to be like the backbone of this team next season. So yes, everything being brought in should be set up to amplify those two guys, or to at least in you have a guy like Ingram that can actually make the you can take some of the playmaking load away, so it doesn't have to be Davis just creating all the time without with the basketball. Like he can get off, and he's an excellent spot up shooter, has been for several years. Ryan can do some of that as well. If you remember with Jalen Withers, like going back to his time at Louisville, I will be fascinated to see like where he fits in at UNC, because I always thought he was most comfortable three seasons ago now when he was a small ball five as a redshirt freshman.
Oh, that game he played in Cameron up close. He was a really good small ball five in that game. Yeah.
Got to play with two good guards and, you know, that are like fringe NBA guys and David Johnson and Carly Jones. That probably helped. But each and every season since then, he got further away from the center spot, would play the four. And that at times this past season under Kenny Payne would play some three. So, and like all of a sudden he can be a good shooter at the five, but then you put him on the wing and you know, and you need him to shoot. So I don't know. I'm still curious to see like where they get some of the stretch, you know, for shooting from and sort of what the role is with Withers. But these guys they brought in to bring in shooting, to bring in secondary creation, and a guy like Ingram that just like is a big time talent add and is a really, really good passer with size is pretty significant.
Brian Geisinger is with us here. One more thing on North Carolina. They have two more scholarships remaining. You can assume they're going to keep one open to prevent a G.G. Jackson situation like last year in the case somebody has a good summer out of this number one recruiting class they have next year and wants to reclassify. But if Hubert was going to use one more of those scholarships on a transfer, is there a player that makes sense or a specific type of player that you would like to see Hubert add?
Yeah, I would just say a stretch four would be really be the one thing, because I think you can see some lineups where Harrison Ingram is playing the four, and that way you can really max out on ball handling and passing, and there would be enough shooting in those lineups. But Ingram's been a sort of like a spotty at best shooter, though he has some good flashes shooting off of movement and relocation. And Withers, I think, profiles as like a four that should be able to give you some playmaking and some shooting too, but that's been inconsistent at best. I do think someone like Jalen Washington, who's, you know, is returning as a sophomore, perhaps he is that guy. He certainly showed some ability to space and to face up in the mid-range this past season. And those guys like Washington and Baycott could be a really good, you know, four or five pairing, although I'm sure Washington will also see some time as at the backup center. But my thought would be just one more front court shooter to help potentially open the floor around Baycott post-ups and pick and roll with RJ Davis.
A few years ago, you and I were sitting in a conference room talking about Steve Forbes after he brought in Alondis Williams, and you wrote a story about what Steve Forbes, had identified for the portal and what he could potentially do, Alondis Williams, and he went on to be an ACC Player of the Year. And one thing you and I discussed was, don't overlook the fact that Steve Forbes has a JUCO background and was used to how fluid rosters can be. So you and I then went through all the ACC head coaches, their backgrounds, to see who else could match that, you know, that JUCO element. And there was one other coach that had some of that in his background, and that was Kevin Keats, who this offseason, I don't know, is it fair to say that nobody in the ACC thus far has had a better offseason at adding talent than Kevin Keats has had in Raleigh?
Yeah, I mean, what Duke did, just like retaining guys.
Sure.
You know, like, sure. You know, being able to keep Proctor and Mitchell and obviously Filipowski in-house is big. But yeah, State's done a really, really nice job bringing in different players. I've been doing a film dive on DJ Horn recently, who I think will give them a lot of shot-making and three-point shooting that they're certainly going to need with guys like Terquavion Smith and Jarkel Joyner out the door. Jalen Clark, I think, is someone that can give them transition scoring, perimeter defense, and another guy that can be like a real weapon in the press for NC State. So I think Keats, who not just like the JUCO element, but go back to his time where he was the head coach at Hargrave Military Academy.
Yes.
And you're having to microwave a roster each and every season. Look, State's got some guys coming back and maybe a few that are sort of like up in the air right now. But I even thought the Ben Middlebrooks addition, bringing in another center from Clemson that can do some different stuff in the pick and roll and has good foot speed for a five, like that was nice. So yeah, I think this has been a promising offseason for Kevin Keats, but they're going to have to replace a lot. You know, I mean, losing Joyner, losing Terquavion, Jack Clark, you know, some other guys that have moved on or could move on. So there was a lot of turnover on the roster, but it does look like the staff once again did a good job sort of identifying some needs and using the portal to check those boxes.
Foot movement for Ben Middlebrooks is just a very nice way to say, DJ Burns kept getting called for offensive fouls against Ben Middlebrooks. And I think half of his offensive fouls last year came against Clemson. So if you can't get around him with your best post player, figure out a way to get him to transfer to your school. You ready?
And just last thing too, sure. I would say with someone like MJ Rice, like we'll just, you just didn't get to play much at Kansas.
Yes.
So you really got to lean on your evaluation from him as a prep. And certainly, like, he was well-regarded in that level. I'll just be curious to see, like, where he lands in state's rotation. You know, my guess is he'll play vacillate between the three and the four. But that can mean very different things for what state does with its pick-and-roll and pick-and-pop attack. So I'll be curious to see how Rice fits in next season as well.
Getting from the college to the NBA portion of the proceedings, it's time for me to try and out-precise the guys.
Brian Geisinger is a basketball genius. Josh Graham, is not.
I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong.
Listen as Brian launches half-court shots and Josh, well, double dribbles all over himself.
And there's nothing you can do about it.
Get off the bench and try to out-precise the guys.
For those who are new, WD's pulled some stats. BG's big on advanced analytics and numbers to understand the game of basketball. And he's also really good at helping us understand all of it too. So to try and flex a little bit, WD is going to ask Brian Geisinger and I some very specific statistical type questions regarding the NBA. And we'll see who gets the most correct. Here we go.
Steph Curry dropping 50 points. It's the most in Game 7 history in the win over the Kings. My question to you is, what was the next highest amount points in a Game 7 Steph Curry has had in his career?
Oh, Steph.
Steph Curry.
Oh, no. I was ready. I knew he topped Durant by two. I was about to write 48 down and do that. What was his next best? Okay, I have a guess written down.
Yeah, just ridiculous shot making from Curry yesterday. I will say, let's go 38. Curry.
I've got 45 written down.
36 points. That was in the Game 7 win over OKC back in 2016.
Everybody's talking about the sheer like number of points he scored because of that Game 7 record. 38 shot attempts, the most he's ever had in any basketball game. That is playoffs or regular season. I don't want to hear any more stuff about, oh, Steph can't carry a team. He needs Draymond and Clay. Both of those guys were bad yesterday, and Steph carried them. All right, what's next?
All right, so the Heat, they took game one over the Knicks yesterday. Gabe Vincent, pretty good day for him with 20 points.
Yeah.
How many points per game did he have this season?
Gabe Vincent?
Gabe Vincent. I'm going deep cut on you.
This is deep cut.
Uh-huh. And I bet BG knows it.
Gabe has turned into a nice like rotation piece for the Heat the last couple of years as they just continue to get hot at the right moment. I am going to say 10 points per game for Gabe Vincent this season.
I have 12.2.
It is 9.4.
Yeah, it's just not my bag, man. I'm not doing that poorly, but it's just you're running up against the machine here. What's next?
All right, the Nuggets. Big statement win for them against the Suns in game one. Game two's tonight. Jamal Murray had 34 points in that game, hitting 6 threes. What is his three-point percentage been across these playoffs?
Jamal Murray.
The Blue Arrow. He's incredible. What a ridiculous pick and roll score.
Do people call him the Blue Arrow?
That's the first I've heard of it.
Okay.
That's his nickname, the Blue Arrow.
Okay. Cool.
And I think even going back to maybe to Kentucky, but I will say 43.5%.
I got 47.
It's 46.2.
Yeah. I wasn't shut out. BG took the game. But I at least didn't get shut out. On the way out, I think it's fair to say Lakers-Warriors, probably the most highly anticipated second-round series ever. LeBron versus Steph and all those, you know, storylines. What excites you the most from a basketball perspective about this, though?
So, I mean, an endless supply of things. It starts with, like, how do the Lakers try to guard Curry? Obviously, like, it's a team effort, but, you know, they don't have a guy like Davion Mitchell that and the Kings tried at least in round one to just throw at Curry. And then I will also be fascinated to see like where the offense is for Anthony Davis in this series and how often Golden State looks to go small with Draymond at five against Davis, or you know, how much are they able to just keep rolling with Kevon Looney, who's been just a monster on the glass. But yeah, I would say like who guards Andrew Wiggins for the Lakers, what the coverages look like for Steph Curry, who gets the primary assignment on Steph Curry, and just how much small ball do we see from Golden State going forward the next few weeks.
Game one tomorrow night between the Lakers and the Warriors. Man, you're a six seed in Golden State and you have home court advantage. Not a bad draw if you're Golden State, but LeBron on the other side, that certainly is not what you look for in round two. BG, it's good to see you. Thanks so much for making the time.
Take care, guys.
Your attention, please. It's
showtime. This is The Drive with Josh Graham.
After winning his fourth ring last year, Steph Curry made a pretty compelling case for being one of the 10 best players to ever play in the NBA. He does possess a trait that is, he is the greatest at. He's the greatest shooter in NBA history. Going, when it's all said and done, nobody's going to be close in terms of three-point shooting, how many threes that he's made. But yesterday was not the greatest Steph Curry game ever because he broke the NBA record for Game 7 scoring. He topped Kevin Durant with 50 points in a Game 7, more than anybody's ever had in a Game 7. That's not why. Because then you could roll your eyes and say, Josh, the guy's played in NBA Finals. What's a Round 1 series against Sacramento? Why is that special? This is why yesterday was the greatest Steph Curry game that I've ever seen. It's one of the few times we've seen in his career, in the playoffs, on a big stage, that Steph was forced out of his comfort zone to play a style that he normally never has to play, and he thrived in the role when his team needed him most. And this is what I mean. The record that he broke yesterday, the career mark that he set yesterday, that should be getting the most attention right now, is not the 50 points in a playoff game, in a Game 7. It's the 38 attempts by Steph. That's the most he's ever attempted in a basketball game. Not just playoffs, regular season two, he had never attempted 38 shots in a game until yesterday. Pretty efficient on those, 20 of 38, over 50%. From the field, but those are the most attempts he's ever had in a basketball game. That's not the way he wants to play. Steph wants to share it around. Look at the way he reacted when Klay Thompson finally got one to drop on the right wing and he's fist pumping that 4-point play at the end of the third quarter. That's the way that Steph wants to play. It at heart, even though he's such a great shooter, he's a point guard. Wants to share the basketball and get everybody involved. Strength in numbers, he represents that better than anybody. But he had to play differently out of necessity. Klay didn't have it. Draymond didn't have it. They combined for 7 of 26 from the field yesterday. So they needed to summon something out of Steph. And it looked like pretty early on, Steve Kerr knew it. I think at one point he called a timeout. There was one of those mic'd up things that they had, where he's saying that he wanted to call a timeout just to give Steph a breather. That's where things stood with the Warriors. It's a popular knock on Steph. When people say, oh, you can't have Steph as one of the 10 greatest players ever, they often say, look at his supporting cast. Oh, he won a couple of titles when Kevin Durant was there. Didn't win when he had the most regular season wins in 2016. They blew that 3-1 lead. What did he do? He's never had to carry a team the way LeBron has, the way that Michael Jordan had, the way that many others have. What would he be without that infrastructure of Kerr and Draymond and Klay and all of it? Well, we saw it yesterday. What would he have to do if he had to pull a Kobe Bryant and take a million shots? Well, we saw it yesterday.
38 shots, and he's over 50% from the field and wins in a game seven. That, I don't want to hear that knock again. He's dismissed that knock. And the details, it only magnifies Steph's performance. The Warriors have been atrocious on the road. A bad road team. Yet they go to Sacramento, a good home team, and win game seven by 20? And Steph summons this career game at the age of 35 years old, 36 hours after game six losing on your home floor occurs? That's amazing. It's amazing. So it's not hyperbole. It feels like we're Monday morning quarterbacking. It feels like we're being prisoners of the moment. Josh, it's the first round series. That can't be the best that we've seen of Steph. I think it was because it put a lot of haters to rest. It took away a knock from them. It happened in game seven. He did make some history. He attempted 38 shots. He was out of his comfort zone and put up a masterful performance. A masterful performance. Scott Fitterer, he's going to join the show in 10 minutes, Panthers GM. Love talking to him after the draft rather than before the draft. We'll have him on anytime, but we enjoy the conversation, and I think he enjoys the conversation more when the draft is over with, so he could speak a little bit more openly than before the draft. He'll be here in a bit. And relating the two, before, I think it was game six, Steph was doing his pregame routine, and I noticed he started yelling out, "Bryce Young! Bryce Young!" People were comparing him to Bryce because they're smaller guys, and Steph, he's a Charlotte guy, huge Panther fan. He beat the keep pounding drum before the team rushed out onto the field for Super Bowl 50 in Santa Clara. Just a perfect fit since he's out there in the Bay anyway. So naturally, Bryce had his first press conference as a Panther, and he was asked about Steph.
Steph right now he's got a lot on his plate right now too. Obviously he's focused and locked in on the, you know, the playoff series he's trying to win. But yeah, I'm well aware and definitely have a tremendous amount of respect for him as a player and as a person. Someone I definitely look up to. And yeah, I'm well aware of him being a part of the fan base. So it's super cool.
Do you have your Bryce Young jersey on hold? Did you already purchase one of them? I know the way it works is you purchase it and then they ship it off after they know what jersey number he's going to wear. We still don't know.
Oh, is that how that works?
Yeah, they're not just going to send you a jersey without a
or
number.
Or a number one. I guess you could get the draft night edition.
That's lame.
Is it though?
That. Yeah, he's not going to wear that number. That's lame.
But to answer the question, I have not ordered it yet, but
it's a rookie mistake.
Is it though? I'll get it soon enough.
Got to invest. Make it happen. Steph, super Panther fan there. From over the weekend, though, I was out at Merle Fest, and we'll dedicate Graham's grades this week to my weekend at Merle Fest. I'll save my thoughts on Merle Fest for that at around 4:30 or so. But even while sitting at Merle Fest, I could not escape this piece of sound that was the highlight of the NFL draft. And it comes from the Dallas Cowboys, which drafted running back Deuce Vaughn. If you're like me, chronically online, always online, you've probably seen this clip, probably heard it already, but Deuce Vaughn is a former running back of Kansas State. He's now a Dallas Cowboy. If you're asking, why do I care about this, Josh? Well, Deuce Vaughn's dad, Chris, works for the Cowboys. He's a scout. So he's heavily involved in the scouting process, the draft process. And Jerry Jones, who in addition to being the owner, is of course the GM of Dallas, rather than him giving the call to Deuce Vaughn to let him know the news, he let his father do that for him, and this is how it sounded.
Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
Hey, it's going good. This is Dad. My phone wasn't working. Look at here, man. You want to come to work with me next week?
I wouldn't mind that at all.
I got somebody want to speak to you.
I don't know when I've been speaking for everybody that's really in the heart of the Dallas Cowboys is standing here with a tear in our eye. We're so happy to have you on the Dallas Cowboys.
I can't thank you enough.
Well, what I really want to say, you earned every ounce of me being able to make this call. I'm so excited. There's just something magical about this moment that may be bigger than we even realize here talking to you on the phone. But you is now a Dallas Cowboy. Your daddy just handed the card in right here.
Yes, sir.
It's got him on it. Congratulations.
That's pretty cool. From Jerry Jones and from Chris Vaughn. And now Deuce Vaughn gets to go to work. No chance he gets cut, right?
Just let us enjoy this moment.
I hate to be that guy.
Just let us enjoy this moment.
I don't think Chris Vaughn's going to make that call.
No.
Plus, Deuce Vaughn's a good player. So it is a really neat moment, but it's getting a little too sappy in here. Somebody has to rein it in.
Yeah.
Rein it in.
Well, you like sappy, though.
Oh, I am a sappy guy, but I also like busting chops.
Yeah, you do.
Rare combination. Rare skill set. Twofer. Yeah. So, it is pretty cool. It's a cool moment that happens. I love the draft calls. I do it. I think the Panthers were one of the first ones. Every single one of those calls, they would tape it and put it out there. I wonder if they tell the players ahead of time, though. Hey, listen, these are going out. Just no cursing. Or don't say anything. People are going to see this. People are going to hear this. Or is that now understood?
I don't think they do that.
I don't know.
I feel like they don't because, I mean,
so every single one of these just, oh, I guess that's a good point.
Or you could bleep it.
Yeah, it's a good point.
We're in radio. You know this stuff. Come on now.
Look at you. Producing on the fly. Always thinking like a producer. I appreciate that.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Big fan of Maren Morris, who performed at Merlefest 35 over the weekend. Before we attach letter grades and Graham's grades from my weekend there, which included Friday, where WD filled in for me then, shout out to the Carolina Thunderbirds. They had quite a weekend to advance to the Commissioner's Cup, packing out the Winston-Salem Fairgrounds Annex. I saw some of the video from yesterday when they clinched, listening to former SJS producer Brett Wiseman calling the action at the Annex. They had the double overtime win on Saturday, another tight one yesterday. We'll keep you posted on what's next for them in the Commissioner's Cup, but congratulations out to those folks out in Winston-Salem. Going up the road, up 421 towards the mountain to Wilkesboro, it's going to be quite a month for that area. You had Merlefest over the weekend, and now we're a few weeks away from the NASCAR All-Star Race coming to North Wilkesboro. Boy, is that going to be a zoo. Focusing on the music, though, it's time for Graham's Grades.
Every week is a test for your favorite sports teams.
We don't need no education.
Who passed the test?
If one of y'all says some silly-ass name.
Who dropped the ball?
I don't know.
Josh Graham has the answers.
I think you're very condescending and a know-it-all.
Hey, teacher, leave the kids alone.
Time for Graham's Grades.
A through F, the very good is what we start with. Then we get to the eh, and then to the downright bad. Not a lot of bad from the actual music perspective. If you've never been to Merlefest, it is a treat. Now that I've been multiple years in a row now. Let's start with the very good first, though.
Hey!
Marcus King plus a surprise. He was one of the two headliners on Friday before the Avets took the stage. This guy's a full-blown rock star. Heard him on podcast, knew of him just generally. When you are a redheaded musician, you know, I hear about it as a member of the ginger redhead community. It's a tight-knit group that we have. But this guy the blues, folk, bluegrassy, country rock musician. It's becoming a more popular genre. It's him. He's going right down the Sturgill Simpson and Chris Stapleton route. A star really stood out to me, but this was the surprise, WD. I showed my mom a picture of him. What's this guy look like? Showed her a picture of Marcus King. And it's a picture of him and his wife that made me do a double take. I'm like, she looks familiar. Looks like somebody I used to intern with in radio like 10 years ago. You've seen interns in our business. Generally, they're not usually marrying, with all due respect, country music stars. That's not usually the path for the sports radio intern in Greenville, America. Then, in the middle of the show, he brings out his wife to sing a song with him and says her name is Briley. Well, that's a pretty distinctive name, and it's the same name as that intern. So then I text my former boss in Greenville, did intern Briley marry someone of note? Oh, yeah. Married Marcus King 2 months ago. I was at the wedding 2 months ago in Nashville. It was pretty lavish. That's quite a way to find out that it was two interns at the building at the time, me and Briley. I now host The Drive with Josh Graham in the Triad, and she's married to country music star Marcus King. You can figure out who ended up in the better scenario, but that was a surprise for me on Friday night.
B.
The Avett Brothers. Just because it's expected that they're going to be awesome, and they were, and they're so humble and down to earth and so relatable. Their music's that, but their presentation on the show altogether. Like, you'd have no idea that right after that show in Wilkesboro, they got on a private plane to Los Angeles to be a part of Willie Nelson's 90th birthday party from over the weekend, which they were, and that was pretty cool looking at some of the stuff from the Hollywood Bowl. WD, take one guess. You have one guess in all of music. Who Willie Nelson brought on stage with him to sing Roll Me Up and Smoke Me When I Die?
Snoop Dogg.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Willie and Snoop got that done. But getting back to the Avett, Sam Bush, every year I've been to Merle Fest, has been like a headliner on Saturday night before the big act comes out, the biggest act that they attract on the weekend. I think every year the Avett or Old Crow Medicine Show should be in the lineup. Now, I don't know if logistically you can make that happen, but those are just perfect acts for this event because you cover a lot of genres, including bluegrass, and there's such a tight-knit aspect to their familiarity with the event and what it means to them and the area that is just such a hit and makes it special to watch in person.
C.
Maren Morris. Now, I like Maren Morris's music. Really do. A lot of hits, a lot of songs that you would recognize. But this was a swing for the folks out at Merle Fest. I'll say this. This is where it hit. There were more girls who were teenagers or early 20s types at Merle Fest than I'd ever seen that day who wanted to go see Maren Morris. You want to get more people at your event, different demos involved. And it was a hit in that regard. But the part where it kind of missed, you had another huge bluegrass act named Cynthian that was performing on another stage at the same time, that if you're a traditional bluegrass fan and you're wanting to dance, you're going to go to that over watching Maren Morris. And there was a significant amount of people that left where we were at, not to leave, but to go see Cynthian during the Maren Morris act, because Maren Morris doesn't, even though she's country, there's not much bluegrass in her arsenal, so it was a little bit out of genre for her. I enjoyed the performance. I stayed till the end of that performance. I'm a big Maren Morris fan, and I also appreciate taking a swing, but it was a swing that netted some successful things, but also some stuff that probably wasn't the best for a headliner.
D.
A few inconsiderate festival goers. WD, this is not inept, because what makes Merle Fest special, really, it is the people that go to attend the event. Like, it's the only festival I've ever been to that I just feel safe leaving my chairs out on the lawn and going somewhere else or leaving my blanket out on the hillside and not worrying about it at all. Everybody, or most people, very cordial, very kind, great to be around. The performers, they're receptive to it as a result. They talk about it. Everybody who goes to the event, there's just a mutual respect there that's really cool, and you'll understand only when you visit Merlefest. But when you go to the first come, first serve seating out on the grassy area of music events, this could apply to Walnut Creek or whatever they call it in Raleigh now, or certainly apply to Merlefest or most festivals that have a lawn area outside of the general seating that you can pay for. If somebody shows up hours before and sets up their stuff, don't be the person who rolls up during the start of the show, finding a way to weasel your way in to the front row of seats. This guy, and there were probably three sets of people I've seen do that. I saw do this on Friday and Saturday night. Roll up as the show is starting and finding a little bit of space and just sitting their seats down in front of like a family of four right there that set up their stuff like at 10, 11 in the morning. And you just showed up there at 9 at night right when the thing started. And then acting oblivious as if you didn't just do the biggest bleep hole move possible. And also, if you set up your stuff right behind these people, don't then show up and put your chair in between the two rows. Like, why do you think we put our stuff behind their stuff? Not for you, to make room for you in between the two. Just be a little bit more considerate. Like, I know people don't show up to anything early anymore, but if you're not there early, don't then try to get in front of people who did show up early. Don't do that. Those are the bleep holes.
F.
Rain at a music festival.
Ooh. Yeah. It's bad, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. It's compounded by the fact we were camping. Now, we didn't... Logistics. When you have five people, like it was my brother and sister, my mom and dad, we tried to fit in one tent. We did successfully. And we successfully kept the dirt out of the tent, too. I don't know how we performed that magic trick. It required some logistics late at night. This is one of the instances I'm grateful they don't have alcohol sales inside of the music festival, or else I don't know if we would have had the mentals, as Marshawn Lynch likes to call them, in order to execute this properly. But we did, and it was a muddy mess out in the field quite a bit and trying to get concessions and such. Not anything that Merlefest can really control, but compounded by camping, rain at a music festival, not the greatest thing. At least I had my overalls. And that's been Graham's Grades, Merlefest edition.